Our scripture today is from the first letter of John, chapter 2, verses 7 to 11, and chapter 4, verses 19 to 20. Beloved, I am writing you no new commandment, but an old commandment that you have had from the beginning. The old commandment is the word that you have heard. Yet I am writing you a new commandment that is true in God and in you, because the darkness is passing away and the true light is already shining. Whoever says, I am in the light, while hating a brother or sister, is still in the darkness. Whoever loves a brother or sister lives in the light, and in such a person there is no cause for stumbling. But whoever hates another believer is in the darkness, walks in the darkness, and does not know the way to go, because the darkness has brought on blindness. We love because he first loved us. Those who say, I love God, and hate their brothers or sisters are liars. For those who do not love a brother or sister whom they have seen cannot love God whom they have not seen. The commandment we have from him is this: those who love God must love their brothers and sisters also.
It wasn't the show of my generation. Like I said, that was a couple of weeks ago with Rent. But I admit to sudsing my hair up more than a couple of times, singing, I'm gonna wash that man right out of my hair. Post-breakup, I did. There's something so tactile about that act. And of course, the song is really catchy. It was actually pretty dramatic at the time. Showing a woman doing something so intimate on stage was a big deal. In fact, South Pacific was a big deal for many reasons. In 1949, when it first debuted, it sparked both controversy and was an immediate hit. It was based on James Michener's Tales of the South Pacific. Rodgers and Hammerstein and director Joshua Logan created the Broadway show, drawing on Logan's own personal experience in fleshing out Michener's stories. Mary Martin, once again, was cast. Her character, Nellie Song's, written specifically for her voice. Alongside her was opera star Ezio Pinza as Emile Debec, the middle-aged Frenchman, her romantic interest. The show was set, obviously, in the South Pacific during World War II, and tells of the life of these soldiers, setting the stage for love. Instantaneously, Optimus U.S. Navy nurse Nellie Forbush, and French plantation owner Emile Debec fall in love. Meanwhile, U.S. Marine Lieutenant Cable, who has arrived for a special spy mission, is approached by Bloody Mary, a sassy middle-aged Tonkinese woman who peddles her wares with personality. Upon seeing Lieutenant Cable, she tells him to go to Bali High, the mysterious island, his island, where, as it turns out, she has a daughter who she pretty much pushes upon him. Now here's the thing. This show is beloved. It was a huge hit for Rodgers and Hammerstein. It blew their first big hit, Oklahoma, out of the water, and people loved it. It dealt with important topics like war and racism and the boundless nature of love, but it is dated. I watched the film version as a kid, and I've seen the show at least once since. I sang those songs even, but as an adult, I have a really hard time with this one. The Pacific Islanders are caricatures. They're actually dismissed as nobodies. She's nobody. She's Tonkinese. And what kind of a name is Bloody Mary? She's depicted as a woman who tries to scam people out of money and basically prostitute her daughter out of poverty. Speaking of women, it is incredibly sexist. There ain't nothing like a dame is a swell number. As sailors sing about the merits of women and their bodies. I mean, I don't doubt that men were lonely, separated from their wives and their sweethearts at home. That's gotta be hard, but that's just hard. However, these guys weren't allowed to fraternize with the nurses unless they were officers. So even though their sweethearts were at home, they were drooling for some women in their lives. And so they sing about them. These dames that they're singing about are pretty much the nurses that are running by as these men are, they just couldn't be stopped from their ogling while poor Nurse Nellie comes up. She might have well been meat the way they were drooling after her. They want those nurses and they want those women. It's sexist. It's a sexist show. But it was 1949. It's catchy though. Even the dame song is catchy. You watch it again and you see it with a new light when you look at those guys in their midriffs. The show is a love story. That of Ensign Forbush and Emile DeBeck, of course, and also the love between Lieutenant Cable and Liat. Bloody Mary mysteriously calls out to Lieutenant Cable, seducing him with the song about the mysterious Bali High. And when she offers him a trinket from the island after telling him he is sexy, he asks if he has a sexy girlfriend. Well, she's from Philadelphia, he explains. She might not like that trinket. No matter that he has somebody waiting at home, Bloody Mary has a plan to push her daughter upon him. So when Cable's mission takes him to Bali High, Bloody Mary sees her opportunity and offers the lieutenant her daughter in the same way she first offered him a token from the island. It was almost as if her daughter was no different, an object to be possessed, one that belonged to him, as though he should take what is his. Liat, her daughter, never speaks a word of English, and only about three words of French. Her mother and her body do the talking. She's a young woman, but it's better for us to call her for what she is, a girl. Her mother pretty much sells her out. In our society, we call this rape and child prostitution. In the show, it's forbidden love. After Bloody Mary presents her daughter, she asks, "You like Lieutenant?" And apparently he does, because seconds later, the couple fall into each other's arms in a lustful embrace. It's clear what happens next. This forbidden love, it's not forbidden because he's a grown man who's sleeping with a girl. It's forbidden because he's white and she's not. Didn't stop him, though. Apparently, in a matter of moments, he fell in love with her and would return to the island again and again to run into her embrace. So we have to ask ourselves, 21st century thinkers that we are, how in love could Lieutenant Cable be with this girl? He knows she's a girl. He says it. You're just a kid. Didn't stop him from lusting after her or singing about her, calling her younger than springtime. They didn't speak. They just had sex. That is not what makes a partnership. That's not the makings of love. Bali High is this mystical place that Bloody Mary has played up as a fantasy for the white male soldier. He can have everything he ever dreamed of with this beautiful Asian girl. Forget about that Philadelphia girl, you know, the one who's at home writing you letters, praying that you won't be killed. There's no respect for either of these women, girls. It plays on fantasies. But in reality, this is domination. And while her mother is culpable, she's desperate, trying to make a living. But she's not faultless either. Really, nobody's faultless, except for Liat, who didn't deserve to have her adolescence taken away from her to satisfy the desires of a lonely soldier intoxicated by an island. She was played and betrayed in body and emotion. Now, ironically, to my 21st century self, this show was heralded for addressing racism in the 20th century, even though we look at it now and it is riddled with it. The white people are the only ones who have any sort of character depth, if that. The Asian characters are mere stereotypes. What's worse, Juanita Hill, the actress who played Bloody Mary on stage and in the 1958 film version, was actually an African-American woman. They couldn't even find a real woman from the South Pacific to play her. It's crazy. So I read this seething article in the Huffington Post by Professor Rick Ayers at the University of San Francisco entitled South Pacific, Musical Orientalism. It really struck on all the feelings that I was having, as uncomfortable as I was watching the show again. When I saw it as a kid, I never thought about it. But now I can't watch it without feeling angry because it's so colonial, it's so dismissive of the people who are indigenous to the islands, and it's completely focused on this white experience. This article names all of that, and without saying that we stop watching it, asks us to use it as a diving board to plunge deeper into the conversation about race, white privilege, and the concept of love. Don't get me wrong, he writes. I'm not one of those old scolds who thinks artwork should be suppressed or held back. Let's show them all, and then let's have a talk about them. I agree. Let's praise it for what it is, but name it for what it is, too. He goes on, the music is infectious, the dancing is superb, the story is compelling, but come on, can't someone mention that South Pacific is a textbook example of Orientalism? That Western mania for dominating the lives and dismissing the souls of those who are not white? Yeah. So here's the thing. It pushed people in its day. And we should name that because it really did push the envelope. Broadway wasn't expecting to get a lesson on racism. They were just looking for catchy songs and great dance numbers. But South Pacific came along and pushed that topic on race. It called out racism in a way that needed to be heard. I don't want to lessen the impact it made in 1949, but we must not be frozen in 1949. It reminds me of something our pastor emeritus, the Reverend Dr. Gary Barmore, always says, right? We need to be just as progressive in our era as the Bible was in its. So what Gary means by this is that we cannot be limited to the scope of what our biblical writers were limited to before the Common Era and at the turn of the millennium, but just as they were radical in their day, we must be in ours. However, we cannot take the Bible literally and expect that what was forward-thinking 2,000 years ago is still going to be forward-thinking today. We need to apply the same distance that Scripture had in its day to ours. Right, Gary? So it goes for South Pacific. It was radical in its day, but we cannot expect it to be radical in ours. We have to take it to the next level and name what doesn't work so that we can salvage what does. Make sense? It certainly did address racism in a way that was pretty radical for a musical to do in its time. If you think about it, Rodgers and Hammerstein's preceding big hit was Oklahoma, and they didn't attempt anything close to this. So the fact that they decided to take this route needs to be applauded, however flawed we might think it is today. Cable falls for Liat, or at least is under a sex spell. But when Bloody Mary tries to get him to commit to marrying her, he backs out. He knows it won't ever work. Perhaps he thinks about this woman he's engaged to back home. How could he break it off with her and marry this girl that he can't even speak with? She'd never be accepted. And because of his choice, neither would he. So he laments the world he lives in. But despite having returned to Bali High for a romantic romp, when Bloody Mary tries to get him to make good on his actions, he explains, I can't marry Liat. So she grabs her away and threatens to marry her off to another Frenchman, the girl, a mere bartering chip. Then there's the storyline of Nurse Nellie falling in love with a Frenchman, which names her internalized racism. She cannot bear the idea that her love interest has two half-Polynesian children. She thinks the kids are adorable, but as soon as she finds out that they are Emile's, she runs off and drives drunk back to camp. Another non-issue, apparently, in the 1940s, and then again in the 1950s when the film was made, But I gotta call this one out because I watched it and it just struck me how this woman is guzzling champagne and now she's really emotional and then she gets back into a Jeep and she drives downhill and no one thinks anything of it. At any rate, her prejudice is enough for her to call the whole relationship off. She just can't stand the idea that the man that she wants, that wonderful guy she's in love with, happens to have previously loved a woman that was not white. Can you imagine? It wasn't that he'd had past relationships, it was who he had the relationship with, and that there was living proof of it, and she, should she marry him, would have to live with those children forever. She just can't get over this idea that he could love a woman that was so very different than her. Despite Emile's profession of love, she cannot bear it, and she puts in for a transfer and calls the whole thing off. I can't marry you, not because of your children. It was their Polynesian mother then. Their mother died. She nods. Yes. There is no reason. This is something born in me. I can't help it, she explains. It is not, he counters. I can't help it. I can't help it. She turns to Joe Cable to get him to explain how she feels, and then she runs off. I do not believe it is born in you. I do not believe it, the Frenchman asserts. Cable, who now regrets turning Liat away, agrees with Emile. No, it's not something you're born with. You have to be carefully taught. Listening to that song today, as we just did, you can't help but hear how racist it sounds. It's like a little painful on the ears, but you sang it so beautifully. The sentiment still holds true though, right? That you have to be taught to hate, that you have to be taught that people who look different than you are bad, that their lives aren't worth what your life is worth. You have to be taught to hate. And it starts at a young age, by 6 or 7 or 8. You're not born with that kind of hate. It's cultivated. Ultimately, Nellie realizes that her Frenchman is a hero, having taken on the dangerous spy mission and helped to change the course of the war. She learns that Joe Cable died, a real tragedy because he had professed his love for Liat and a desire to stay in the South Pacific and marry her. Recognizing that Emile himself could be very easily near death, she realizes that she loves him enough to look past his past. Now, I don't think she really ever gets over it. She doesn't actually accept it, but she tolerates it. She tolerates the man that she loved once loved someone else who wasn't white. And because it was in the past and not the present, she can move forward with her relationship, and she's gonna raise those children. You have to listen to me, she says, and you have to like me, which I also thought was pretty funny. It kind of makes you choke to hear her words now. But at that day and age, to tolerate was a pretty big deal. She was being able to move through that hate that she'd been taught as a little girl in Little Rock, Arkansas. Besides the lingering racism that is portrayed in the show and all of the other dated aspects about it, that song hits on something that is so true. You have to be taught to hate. You gotta be carefully taught to be afraid of those who have a different shade of skin than you. It's sad that for as much progress as we've made since this show came out over 75 years ago, we still haven't figured that out. We've moved past calling Asians Orientals, and hopefully aren't using all of these stereotypical images. We still see racism, and surely we see sexism in our world, but it's not quite as overt as it was. And yet, we're still teaching hate. We're probably even more carefully taught than we were before. After all, back then, you could teach it overtly. Now you gotta be carefully taught covertly. Now we like to hide our racism behind things like patriotism. Even our own president has stoked these fires, stirring up controversy surrounding the flag, knowing full well that the protest regarding taking a knee has absolutely nothing to do with disrespecting the flag, but everything to do with racism and the unjust system that allows black people to be killed, disproportionately imprisoned, and discriminated against on nearly every level. But instead of looking at our culture's culpability and naming this racism and attempting to right it, we are being taught that it's an attack on our flag. So carefully taught. Likewise, we have watched as a plea for help cries out for an affirmation that black people matter in this country, that their lives are not disposable. And we have been carefully taught to negate that plea, to wash it down, or worse, to vilify it. We have been taught that the proper response to Black Lives Matter is all lives matter. Ugh. That somehow affirming black lives is an attack on police officers. Oh, how carefully we have been taught to take something and manipulate it into something else. You gotta be carefully taught something like that, because if you're not careful, then people are gonna name it for what it is and call you a racist. So you must be taught to look like you're not. Carefully taught. It's a sad state of affairs. We've got to be taught to be suspicious of brown people because they might take our jobs, or they might rob us, or they might rape us. There's technique in teaching xenophobia. You've got to be taught to hate without appearing to hate. You've got to be taught your privilege, but in just such a way that you can easily deny it when you're called out. So carefully taught that there is always plausibility of denial. Taught so well that you don't even know you've been taught. Just like Nurse Nelly. I don't know why. There's no reason. We are so carefully taught that we cannot even see the reason. We don't know why we think the way we do. We just do. And some of us even believe we're born with it, that it's just the way things are. Carefully taught. Cable's right. We have been insidiously taught to hate, to think that people who are different are bad, to come up with reasons to rationalize our fear, our distrust, our actions, to fail to see our own privilege, particularly white privilege, or worse, to deny that it exists at all. Look, folks, South Pacific ain't the best show in the world for the 21st century, but it shouldn't be shelved. Instead, it should be used to think deeply about the isms of both the 20th century and the 21st centuries, to look at ourselves and ask ourselves, what have we been taught? And do we need to be untaught or retaught another way? Jesus reminds us that hate is never the answer. We are to love our brothers and sisters, not to be colorblind, as we once were taught, right? But to see people for who they are, to love them not in spite of their differences, but because of them, to love one another, to see our brothers and our sisters as God's children, and to raise our children in love, we must be teachers of love. The lesson learned here, love. Love. Amen.